Thank you, Pascal. It's great to be here. I give design credit to our CSTE fellow, Beth Ann Frost, for our vaccine allocation manual cover. This is the H1N1 edition, if you're interested. My objective today is to describe how the design and operation of Tennessee's H1N1 vaccine distribution system was used to optimize vaccine allocation to achieve our state priorities. And in order to do that, I need to tell you what our state priorities were, because our priorities were different from priorities in some other states because of the specific conditions within our state. And I think each state appreciates the fact that we were able to tailor our system to our own needs and not try to fit one national standard expectation. Our highest priority in Tennessee was the swift administration of all available vaccine to persons at risk in the face of an already circulating virus. It's important to note that in Tennessee, we had one of the earliest peaks of disease, and so by the time vaccine was becoming available, we were well into our H1N1 wave, unlike some parts of the state. In order to meet this priority, we knew that more providers would result in faster administration, more people giving the shots. Also, the greater convenience to recipients was likely to result in faster administration. And finally, we made an explicit commitment to provide access for all ACIP target groups. We did not select out a subset to focus on, for example, school-aged children or a specific population like that. In order to meet this priority, we also were working with the basic assumption that in Tennessee, about 90% or so of seasonal flu vaccine is given by the private sector. They also meet our need to provide convenient access because they have walk-in clinics and pharmacies, and a lot of the people in Tennessee are used to going to the pharmacy to get their flu vaccine, especially those who don't see physicians regularly. To attract the private sector and get them engaged, we knew we had to provide good customer service to them. This federal campaign was likely to be complex and unfamiliar to us as well as to them, but especially to the private sector. And they are volunteers who can choose what they will do and can do, and it's up to us to keep them happy. And the choice was made in Tennessee, thankfully, that vaccine distribution would be led by the immunization program because we had the experience and understanding to work with these providers. Our distribution team, because our priority was to get the vaccine in arms as quickly as possible, operated under the assumption that as long as demand exceeded supply, we would order 100% of the doses allocated every day, and so we weren't slowing the process down at all in the stage of understanding what CDC was allocating to us and then getting it into a provider office. Our distribution system designed to support that was complex, but we tried to counteract the complexity by having a small, focused, experienced team work on it and minimize the use of rotating volunteers who would come in and require 2 or 3 days of training to get up to speed. We had some of that, but we had a really focused core group of individuals. So those were the operating principles. Now is the time we have to move from these principles into practice, and we faced a number of challenges. I just never thought they'd be so bad, so long, and so frequent. Allocation phase one, and as I said, allocation was our primary focus from the get-go. Phase one was defining who was going to be eligible to receive the vaccine. Some of you are familiar with our online pre-registration system that we developed through our immunization registry. Many states use similar systems to pre-register private providers. As part of that, we collected the facility type, and we use that facility type later on as a proxy for their target population, patient population, and to determine their priority. Pre-registration was open August 5th through October 1st, and only those who registered through this site and our existing BFC providers were eligible for ordering vaccine. Customer service, this was critical. Phase two was making sure that these providers who signed up were happy. We had a dedicated email address and toll-free phone number just for our H1N1 vaccine providers. they were used to getting in touch with us this way, and we actually hired two temps to staff that so that they had consistent access to a person. We sent out weekly blast email provider updates with the latest information starting in early August, and special updates for emergencies, which worked out very well during vaccine recalls. We archived those documents in the registry so they could find them later if they signed up late and needed to check something. And throughout this process of several weeks before we actually got into asking them for a vaccine order, we really got to know them. Order placement was a challenge. We had 9 products from 5 manufacturers. At that time, we didn't know at that point that GSK would not have to factor in. We had uncertain supplies and timing of when we would get different formulations, but we needed to make sure that as quickly as we got vaccine out, we were identifying and shipping to higher priority recipients first, and that we at all cost avoided inappropriate shipments, sending vaccine to a provider that they couldn't use or didn't want to use, or doses they couldn't store. After many hours of thinking about this with some of the best minds in our division, we arrived upon the solution of age-based ordering with the option to select a formulation preference. It was important that providers specify the formulation they would accept because of the issue of prefilled syringes versus multi-dose vial storage base. I mean, prefilled syringe box of 100 is about 10 times bigger than the same number of doses as multi-dose vials. So we didn't consider them interchangeable. This is actually the VFC provider's hard copy form that they filled out to place their order. They had to order in boxes of 100. We kept it simple. We weren't going to be repackaging anything. And they ordered based on the age of the recipients. So if an internist wanted to vaccinate people who were all 18 years of age and older, and they needed multi-dose vials, they told us how many boxes they needed. We could fill that order with any available brand licensed for someone 18 years of age or older. We didn't allow them to specify which brand they wanted, and that gave us the latitude to move back and forth depending upon our supply. Now, we did allow them to specify FluMist because it's not interchangeable with injectable vaccines, and if they ordered FluMist, that's exactly what they got. Now, the daily vaccine distribution process, this graph is intended to show you it was complex, and it happened every day. And if you want to know the nuts and bolts of the complex data management process, Beth Ann Frost, our CSTE fellow, will be presenting on that in session J1 tomorrow. I'm going to look at just the allocation part of this process. So our daily distribution steps, talking generally, is first divide our CDC allocation geographically among our health department regions. Second, group those eligible orders within the region by priority of the recipients. Third, decide who gets what. Fourth, submit the VACMAN orders and then email the recipients that the vaccine is on its way. Moving to geographic distribution, step one was dividing the product among our 13 public health regions. We had a simple Excel spreadsheet because I am not technically oriented. And so one of our EPIs made this for me, and I would put in 353 boxes of Novartis multi-dose vials in this column, and it would spit out how many boxes needed to go to each of our regions for that particular allocation. Once I knew how many boxes a region was going to get, the second step was prioritizing the eligible orders from providers within that region. So this is when we go back to the facility type that we had our providers put down when they pre-registered. This list of 22 different facility types were the 22 options they had to choose from. If they said other, we fit them ourselves into the best fit category. And then we took those 22 different categories, and for each formulation, we ranked them as a recipient. Now, this is just an early draft of a facility ranking. I didn't want to get into trouble with anybody by showing you the final secret ranking of the facility types. But for example, acute care hospitals were ranked number one for receiving vaccines that could be given to adults because we knew healthcare providers needed to get vaccine right away in early small quantities. But if it was a prefilled syringe that was preservative-free for an adult, we made OBGYNs the top priority for that one. Now, people could be co-prioritized. It wasn't from 1 to 22, but this is how we laid it out for each formulation, and that meant that we got a nice mix of provider types when we pulled out the the orders that were eligible for filling each time we placed orders for a particular formulation. Looking at now allocating the doses to facilities and how this all came together. Now, this very detailed Excel spreadsheet is what I looked at for hours each day during the vaccine allocation process. The actual decision of taking those, 19 boxes of vaccine going to Hamilton County and giving it to the providers in that region occurred by hand, and I actually did that myself every day. It was a major time investment for a senior member of the team, and yet it allowed for continuous problem solving in this complex and fragile system. We could address problems instantly and move forward with making allocations. If I knew through the grapevine that a provider wasn't using their vaccine and was slowing down on getting it out, we could skip them over and give it to someone we knew was working really hard and getting vaccine out very quickly. But on this table, you see the region, CHR is Chattanooga, the facility name, the type, the rank for that particular formulation, and then the number of boxes that could be, the number of boxes that were needed that could be filled by that Novartis multi-dose vial box. Now, the yellow column I filled out with the boxes that I allocated for them. And then as a reference, while I was looking at the total they had ordered, I was also looking at the total and number of initial boxes ordered and what percent of their order had already been filled. So you can see on this, I've got a couple of new orders in from providers who hadn't gotten any vaccine before. And so I made sure I got a box to them right away so that they could get started vaccinating because they hadn't received anything yet. After each daily allocation sheet was completed, we then sent the worksheet on to the VacMan team. They added in the supplies in the Sharps containers, and we uploaded the orders into VacMan and sent the emails to the recipients using mail merge function on that same spreadsheet. So the real question is, did this strategy work? Did we achieve our goal of getting vaccine into arms quickly? And the answer, we believe, is yes. The chart here is showing, it was provided to us by the Countermeasure Response Administration at CDC, and it shows the cumulative percentage of the population vaccinated by week for the first 7 weeks of the vaccine campaign, as assessed by the doses administered reported to the CRA from all of the states. Tennessee is the yellow bar, the blue bar is the United States, and the white bar is option two, which simply means other states that reported through the CRA website, like Tennessee. And as you can see, every week we far outstripped the US average percent of the population vaccinated. And by the final week, we had nearly 1,000 private providers reporting having given doses, as well as nearly 1,300 who ultimately received shipments. So this process was imperfect, and we'd like to improve it next time with someone else's leadership. The data management process was very complex and was susceptible to errors. We sometimes had providers who got too little or too much, especially if they didn't call us to cancel their order balance after they received a few shipments and realized it wasn't going as fast as they thought it would. And sometimes the facility type didn't work very well as a perfect proxy for at-risk population. But once we found out about the problem, we could fix it immediately in our system and move forward. And that kept our providers happy. So, speaking of the providers, what was their perspective? In February, we did an online evaluation of our process to see if this network system really worked for them. This was done through SurveyMonkey, which is how we collected information from them frequently throughout the experience. We had good response, 574 respondents, and we were most thrilled to learn that the answer to the question, based on your experience, would you participate in a similar state and federal mass vaccination campaign again? Over 96% said yes, they would. And even better, based on their experience, 62% were more likely to use our immunization registry in the future, and nearly half were more likely to offer seasonal flu vaccine and other routine vaccines in the future. A little postscript to this is that we have translated our age-based ordering process over to the pre-booking for the 2010-11 influenza season in the VFC program. Again, we have many manufacturers, different age indications and formulations, so we're asking our providers to place their orders based on the age of the intended recipients and check a preferred brand with the understanding that if we don't get enough of that brand, we'll substitute an equivalent product. And so we think that now that they're used to doing that for H1N1, it's a little easier to do that than to try to manage all the different specific requests. Finally, I'd like to have a big thanks to everybody who sacrificed their time, their energy, and their health for the success of this vaccine distribution system. All we ask is that you give us your heart, and you did. Thank you.